don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. All right, guys, welcome back to another Cryptoconomy Quick Read. We did episodes, 62 and 63? Yeah, 62 was about the channel factories, and then 63 was about atomic swaps. And those are both just digging a little bit deeper into references made in this article, which we will be reading today, another one by Aaron Von Wertheim, and it is titled, The Future of Bitcoin, What Lightning Could Look Like. And obviously, it was posted on BitcoinMagazine.com. But we will go ahead and jump in. After years of conceptualization and development, the first Lightning implementations are now in beta. As a result, more nodes are appearing online every day. A growing number of users are opening channels with one another, and some merchants even started to accept Lightning payments. But of course, these are still the very early days of the Lightning network. While the main implementations are usable and some wallets and other applications are available, Bitcoin's overlay payment network is projected to improve over the next few years in areas ranging from network architecture to security and usability and more. These are some of the more important Lightning projects currently in development. Dual-funded channels. The Lightning network consists of a series of payment channels. Each payment channel exists between two users, allowing funds to be sent back and forth between them. However, in this early stage of development, payment channels can only be funded by one of the two parties. The funding party must first make a transaction to his counterparty. Only then can that counterparty return a payment within the same payment channel. The Lightning Network white paper, however, proposed dual-funded channels, for which a specification proposal has now also been made by Async, the company behind Eclair. As the name suggests, dual-funded channels will let both users partly fund a payment channel by each depositing some Bitcoin. This should bring more flexibility to the Lightning user experience, as users can immediately send as well as receive payment after having opened a channel. Submarine swaps. In order to make a Lightning payment, users must deposit funds in a Lightning channel. Once in a channel, these funds cannot be sent to regular on-chain Bitcoin addresses unless the channel is first closed. This means that Bitcoin in a Lightning channel is somewhat separated from Bitcoin in a regular wallet, not unlike how money in a checking account is somewhat separated from money in a savings account. But there are solutions to make switching between Lightning and on-chain payments more seamless. One solution is submarine swaps, developed by Alex Bosworth, but conceptualized by Lightning Labs CTO Alaualua Asuntakin even before that. Submarine swaps essentially let users send Lightning payments to a middleman on the Lightning network. That middleman will send a corresponding amount of Bitcoin to a regular on-chain Bitcoin address. It also works the other way around. Users can send regular on-chain payments to the middleman, and that middleman will then send a corresponding amount of Bitcoin to a receiving Lightning node on the Lightning network. Importantly, with submarine swaps, this conversion is done atomically, using a trick that is already embedded in the Lightning network. The Lightning payment and the on-chain payment can effectively be linked to each other. This makes it impossible for the middleman to steal funds by not forwarding the payment. In agreement with the users, he could charge a small fee for his service. Splicing. Another solution to make the Lightning user experience more seamless is called splicing. In essence, splicing would let a user top up funds in an existing Lightning channel or drain funds from it, potentially while keeping the channel open. The idea is simple. Any Lightning channel starts with an opening transaction, which ensures that both users consent to moving the funds in the channel. The rest of the Lightning channel consists of a series of subsequent transactions exchanged between the users, which aren't usually broadcast to the Bitcoin network. The funds in the opening transaction don't move until the channel is closed. When splicing in, users take the opening transaction to instead send funds to a replacement opening transaction, which includes more Bitcoin, from one or both users. Since this new opening transaction confirms on the blockchain, the channel is topped up. Until the new opening transaction is confirmed, the two users can simply update both the old and the new channel at the same time to avoid any channel downtime. Conversely, when they splice out, users take the opening transaction to send funds to a regular on-chain address and potentially keep some of it in the channel using the same trick. This way, users can make on-chain transactions straight out of a Lightning channel. L2. Each time a new payment is made, Lightning channels between users are updated to reflect their mutual balances. The trick used to accomplish this currently involves a penalty for users who try to cheat by broadcasting an older balance, presumably because that older balance would pay them more. Cheating users can lose all the funds they have in a channel. The problem is that the broadcasting of old balances is not always a cheating attempt. There are a number of scenarios in which users can accidentally broadcast an older balance, for example, because of a software bug or a backup gone wrong. In such scenarios, a complete loss of channel funds is quite a heavy punishment. First published on April 30th of 2018, L2 is the newest proposal featured in this article, developed by Blockstream's C-Lightning development team, Dr. Christian Decker and Rusty Russell, and Lightning Labs Ersunsekin. L2 updates a channel by building a chain of time-locked transactions, where each transaction spends funds from the previous one to reflect the latest channel balance. If one user broadcasts an older transaction, representing an older channel balance, her counterparty has some time to broadcast the latest transaction, representing the latest channel balance. A solution like this could work today, but it isn't practical in cases of failure. It would require that the entire chain of transactions be broadcast and recorded on the Bitcoin blockchain, more or less defeating the purpose of the Lightning Network. Decker therefore proposed a soft fork change to the Bitcoin protocol to introduce a type of hierarchy in these types of transactions. Any newer transaction can override any older transaction without requiring that all transactions in the entire chain be broadcast. If this soft fork is adopted and activated on the Bitcoin network, Lightning users could create channels in both the current style and by using L2, depending on what they prefer. Compact client-side block filtering. While the Lightning network is a second-layer protocol, the Bitcoin blockchain itself is still relevant for Lightning users for security purposes. Specifically, Lightning users must keep an eye on the blockchain to see if specific transactions are included. This can be resource intensive, in particular for mobile users. A solution for this is called Simplified Payment Verification, or SPV, and was described in the Bitcoin white paper. Current SPV wallets use a trick called bloom filters to find out whether any relevant transactions happened. Unfortunately, bloom filters are rather privacy unfriendly, as wallets essentially reveal all of their addresses to nodes on the Bitcoin network. They also have some scaling and usability issues, as each individual SPV wallet takes up resources from at least one full Bitcoin node. To tackle these issues, Lightning Labs Ersunsekin and Alex Axelrod, along with Coinbase developer Jim Posen, designed a new solution called Compact Client-Side Block Filtering, which they are implementing in the Neutrino wallet. Compact Client-Side Block Filtering essentially inverts the trick that current SPV wallets use. Instead of wallets requesting transactions relevant to them by creating and sending out a bloom filter to full nodes, full nodes create a filter for all Neutrino wallets. The Neutrino wallet then uses this filter to establish that the relevant transaction did not happen, which is really all the users need to know to be sure they're not being cheated. If the filter produces a match, Neutrino fetches the relevant block to see if the match really concerns the exact transaction instead of a false positive. Interestingly, while this trick was designed with the Lightning experience in mind, it could be utilized to benefit regular Light wallets as well. Watchtowers. To avoid being cheated, Lightning users must keep track of potential on-chain transactions that could be relevant to them. While compact client-side block filtering should make things much easier, users do need to check in once in a while to make sure they're not being cheated. If they forget to check, it creates a security risk. Watchtowers are a potential solution that can be traced back to the Lightning Network white paper and has since been improved by Lightning Network white paper co-author and Lit developer Taj Dryja and others. As the name suggests, watchtowers could let users outsource blockchain monitoring to third parties. Current watchtower designs are not set in stone, but would roughly work like this. Whenever users update a channel, they send a small data packet to a watchtower. The first part of this package is a hint of a transaction that they should look out for, as if it were a piece of a puzzle. This hint alone doesn't reveal anything about the content of the transaction that the watchtower must look out for, so users don't give up any privacy in this sense. However, if the relevant transaction shows up in the Bitcoin blockchain, the watchtower can use the hint to recognize it. Then, with the transaction data on the blockchain itself, the watchtower can use the second part of the package they've received to reconstruct the penalty transaction. This penalty transaction sends all funds in the channel to the user that is being cheated, or in the case of L2, it just broadcasts the correct channel balance. The penalty transaction can also be designed to let the watchtower claim part of the funds as a reward, as an incentive to do its job. Users can outsource channel monitoring to multiple watchtowers. Even if one fails, another might not, limiting the risk for Lightning users to the point where it's arguably negligible. Atomic multipath payments. What makes the Lightning Network a network is that the payment channels between users are interconnected. Users can pay across payment channels through peers on the network that act as, quote, middlemen to users they don't have a direct channel open with. However, right now, a single payment must be routed over a single route. If one user wants to pay 5 mBTC to another, not only must he have 5 mBTC in a single channel, all the middlemen in the route must also have 5 mBTC ready in a channel to forward. The bigger a payment is, the smaller the odds of this being the case. Atomic multipath payments, or AMPs, could go a long way of solving this limitation. First proposed by Lightning Labs' Asuntokin and Connor Fromnecht, the idea is simple. Larger payments can be cut up into smaller pieces, all of which have their own route from the payer to the payee through different middlemen. A challenge to realize this solution is that Lightning payments can fail, which would in this case mean that a payment is made partially. Partial payments can easily be a bigger problem than no payment at all, however. A merchant won't be satisfied with a partial payment, while a customer won't be happy spending any money for nothing. The solution to this problem is that AMPs use an extension to the hash time lock contracts, which are already used along Lightning routes, and involve passing secret data along a network. Using a trick similar to the one used by deterministic wallets, which generate multiple Bitcoin addresses from a single seed, the smaller pieces of a larger payment can only be redeemed by the payee if all of them are. If some secret data doesn't make it through the route whole, the entire payment fails. Atomic swaps. The Lightning Network is designed as a scaling layer for Bitcoin, but since many altcoins are software forks of Bitcoin's codebase, it's often not difficult to create similar scaling layers for these altcoins. Already, a small Litecoin Lightning Network exists, and more Lightning Networks are likely to follow. Interestingly, These networks don't need to remain separated in the future. Using a fundamental building block of the Lightning Network called atomic swaps, first proposed by Tier Nolan and realized on Lightning by Lightning Labs FromNet, payment channels can be linked across different blockchains. In other words, a user can send Bitcoin, and as long as a node on the network is willing to make the exchange, another user can receive the payment as Litecoin. Of course, this also means that users can send such payments to themselves. They can send Bitcoin and receive Litecoin. In effect, the Lightning Network could establish a network of trustless cryptocurrency exchanges. For more information on this topic, see Atomic Swaps, How the Lightning Network Extends to Altcoins. Channel factories. The main benefit of the Lightning Network is arguably its potential to vastly increase the upper limit of Bitcoin transactions without burdening the Bitcoin network. As long as two users both have funds in their channel, they can pay each other a virtually unlimited number of times, while only requiring two on-chain transactions, one to open a payment channel and one to close it. Still, two transactions per payment channel could add up if Bitcoin and the Lightning Network gain more adoption over time. A proposal by ETH Zurich researchers Christian Decker, also of Blockstream, Roger Wattenhofer, and Conrad Burchard, called channel factories, could further decrease the average number of on-chain transactions required per payment channel, perhaps significantly. Loosely based on an earlier Lightning-like proposal by Decker and Wattenhofer from 2015, channel factories are a type of payment channel that can exist among many users. Meanwhile, like any payment channel, a channel factory only ever requires two on-chain transactions. And if Schnorr signatures are implemented on Bitcoin, these transactions could be quite compact, even if it involves many users. The channel factories can, in turn, act sort of like sub-channels for the Lightning Network. Participants within a channel factory can open and close a virtually unlimited number of Lightning channels with each other without requiring any additional on-chain transactions. By doing so, they could, in theory, bring the number of required on-chain transactions for the Lightning Network down by a magnitude. For more information on this topic, see This New Scaling Layer Could Make Payment Channels 10 Times More Effective. And those references that were made were for were the articles that we read in episode 62 about atomic swaps. Or no, actually, that was 62 was on the channel factories, and 63 was about atomic swaps. So if you have not listened to those yet, I encourage you to go back and listen to them. They're very good. And give more detail than this article hits about those two topics specifically. But I thought this was awesome. Clearly, there is a ton of work going into this and developing. It's kind of amazing how many things you can build with the same two or three Lego pieces of a smart contract that you can rely on and are secure. And that simple concept of taking a hash time lock contract, and as soon as the first coin is redeemed from someone in the payment, or someone is in the channel or route or sequence of routes in the context of AMPs, multipath payments, the fact that you're releasing that piece of information that makes all of these other transactions immediately valid and go through is what you can build with it is just kind of amazing. That was 9 different improvements in total of changes and or new functionality coming to the Lightning Network to make it more streamlined. And eventually there's going to be services and developers that really wrap and package this up into a simple interface. And it's going to be amazing what the possibilities are. I think we'll first see services come out that essentially do a lot of this management on the back end for like Light wallets, which will be interesting to see as we move from the current Light wallet setup to something more akin to Lightning Lightning wallets or any sort of really second layer protocol that obviously Lightning Network seems to have the upper hand here. I know Raiden is coming to Ethereum, but I have not seen anything, any big news on that one recently. I did have a couple little points I wanted to hit. One is Aaron uses the term middlemen a number of times, particularly regarding the submarine swaps section. And it kind of sounded like, he does actually address it and explain it after the two paragraphs of explanation, but it kind of sounded like we're throwing trusted third parties back into this. But understand, it's no more middlemen than any particular node on a route in a Lightning channel. And as he explained, there's not really any trust involved. With the hash time lock contracts, when the payout happens on the blockchain, it releases the key or the secret data needed to unlock the HTLC payment on the Lightning Network, and or vice versa. I'm not even sure which comes first or if that's dependent on the direction. But essentially, as soon as one payment goes through, you can be sure to redeem the other payment. So in some sense of it, they are middlemen, but just know that they are not trusted middlemen. You're not really worrying, or you don't have to care which node on the network is fulfilling the submarine swap. And another point that I wanted to hit, just because it's kind of a common criticism that you'll hear, is that users will have to pay for watchtowers, and this will be like this terrible fee, and also have to trust watchtowers in all these different ways. And so I wanted to make a key point. Was first is the hint given to the watchtowers, as he noted, does not reveal any information about the transaction. It doesn't give them any of the deeper like amounts, inputs, outputs for the transaction. When it is broadcast to the blockchain, then they could see it. So during a dispute, you essentially would lose privacy over what transaction was being disputed. And that is simply so that the watchtower can step in and confirm the honest player getting the coins. And now in addition, in regard to the fees, is I've heard a lot of people claims like, oh, watchtowers, you're going to require fees all the time, and this is going to be such a headache, and there's going to be fees everywhere. All of these, to me, all of these like little microservices that are referred to seem to be something that would have very negligible fees. Clearly, the routing fees today in particular are just unbelievably tiny, and maybe that will increase, but like it seems to be consistently like 1-2 Satoshi every time when I see people post about this information. And with the watchtowers is you may not even ever have to pay a fee unless there's a dispute, because this doesn't seem obvious at first. This isn't kind of the first thing that you would think of. At first you would think, okay, so I'm paying a watchtower like a subscription fee, what, to watch for my transactions? But it's interesting that, and I'll actually say this quote from the article, that, quote, the penalty transaction can also be designed to let the watchtower claim part of the funds as a reward, as an incentive to do its job, end quote. So what's interesting there is that watchtowers could actually be competing for free to try to grab as many of these pass or transaction hints so that they can be the one to settle the dispute, because you've organized it in such a way that, and again, this is the penalty transaction. So this would be the other users, the cheating users' funds that you're paying the watchtower with, not your own. So it's not costing you anything. They are competing to be the arbiters for any disputes that do come up, because you're letting the cheater pay for the watchtower service. And that is only in the case of an actual dispute. So I thought that was a really interesting and not obvious at first glance use of the rebuilding or designing the penalty transaction or branch in the commitment for Lightning. So, and the last thing I wanted to hit was atomic multipath payments, or AMPs for short. This one, I think, is going to be a really, really big deal for making the whole Lightning process and wallet interface simple. And to be able to send larger payments, I think, is going to be a really important piece of that, mostly because I think reliability will come from and robustness as it grows will come from having more channels rather than specifically having a few channels with larger balances. So kind of in comparison, rather than thinking that Lightning Network would be able to grow in payment size by having the same two channels open that you might have early on with just much larger balances in the channel, but maybe instead having 8 or 9 channels open with a number of different nodes, maybe 8 or 9 nodes, and having still a moderate to smaller balance in each channel, but be able to use 5, 6 at any time very quickly and seamlessly to make multipath payments for any larger purchase that you might do at a grocery store shopping or something similar to that. So I think all these are huge developments, and I'm really excited to see all these play out. And from everything I've heard and for the little bit that I've been playing around with it myself, the advancements and the reliability of payments has really improved massively over the short time span of the network's existence so far. There were a number of times where I had just a lot of headache trying to get the nodes to respond. And I think it was partly also that it was testnet. So most people were just kind of jumping on, playing with stuff for a couple of hours, opening some channels, and then dropping offline. So by its nature, nobody was really serious about it. It was a testnet. So it's really awesome to see such quick improvement, as well as so many new things coming to Lightning Network in the next couple of months. So as always, we will keep a close eye on it. And lastly, I want to give a big shout out to BitcoinMagazine.com. These guys have been around for a really long time. I can't even remember. I was very happy to have a copy of the very first Bitcoin Magazine issue. And I still think I have like the first like 6 or 7 unopened. And they have been an awesome source of news. And particularly back then, you couldn't find, it was Reddit or nothing. Like, there were no real publications in the Bitcoin space. And Bitcoin Magazine quickly stood out as a very reliable source that always did their homework and always focused on the tech and like important developments going on rather than a lot of the fluff and kind of nonsense hype that is in this industry. So a big thank you to those guys for sticking around and being such a reliable source of information. And with that, also thank you, Aaron Von Wertem, because his ability to explain some of this more technical stuff is the whole reason that I have come this far. I've been reading him for a very long time, and I love having someone that I can just see the article and know that I'm going to get really good, dense information about what's going on. So, with that, don't forget to follow both of them at Bitcoin Magazine, and I will tag Aaron Von Wertem in the post, and follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy and Medium at The Crypto Economy as well. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and I will catch you guys next time. Don't forget to share it with all your friends. This has been a Crypto Economy Quick Read. Take it easy, guys. We'll be right back.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.